Okay, so good afternoon, everyone. I'm Bhante Sujata, and we're here to do some meditation this afternoon. So I know that I did this recently, so I should remember this, but I always forget how. What's our schedule for this afternoon? We start the meditation at about 3:15, is that right? Normally? Start the meditation about 3:15 and then finish meditation about 4. And then we have some Q&A after that, is that right? Okay. Okay, so we have a few minutes to talk about an aspect of meditation before we start the practice today. Last night in the Dhamma talk, I spoke about meditation and about how we often take meditation to be an exercise in concentration. We think that meditation means that we have to make ourselves pay attention to a meditation object. And I talked about how that's not really what meditation is about at all. So what I might do for this afternoon, because even though I'm sure some of you were there at the talk last night, but this is something which I think is so important and which is so misunderstood, but I think we need to sometimes hammer things into our heads again and again before we finally get through to it. Especially with that meditation, because it's something that we practice, right? So you get into habits of how you approach it that are not really, you're not really aware of. And I certainly know that's the case for my own practice. Sometimes you pick up things from when you first learned how to meditate that you can keep on doing for many years after that, without really kind of reflecting on it or realizing that it doesn't actually have to be like that. So it's good to remember that since we start meditation as people who are unenlightened, well, at least to start with, we're unenlightened, then we don't really know what we're doing. We kind of stumble along and have a guess and try this and try that. Gradually we learn as we go. So it's probably the case that most of the things we do when we start out are probably wrong. Actually, it's not always the case. Sometimes we get it right when we start and then get it wrong later on. But often this is the case. We approach things from our own conditioning, from our ordinary ways of doing things. And because we're used to developing this idea of, you know, how do you learn something, you know, by applying yourself, by making yourself do it, by mastering it, by repeating it, by practicing again and again, that we bring this kind of same attitude to meditation. But meditation isn't really that kind of thing. It's not really a skill to be mastered. I talked last night about this idea of, if we think of the instead of thinking of the present moment, of having to be in the present moment, if we think of the present, I really like this idea. So think of the present, so that the present is what is given to us. Right? Present is a gift. That That's a very, very powerful shift in the way that you approach meditation. Stop thinking that I have to somehow make myself pay attention or be in the present moment. The present moment is here anyway. The present moment is all there is. We've never known anything else for a whole life other than the present. So there's no kind of present that we have to make ourselves pay attention to. Just be aware of what's happening anyway. We're here, we're in the present. Don't think of meditation as something which you have to apply yourself to. And listen to the language. Pay attention to the language that we use when we're talking about meditation, either talking to ourselves or talking to others about meditation. And we use words like we trying to meditate. Don't try to meditate, just meditate. We use these words, these very kind of revealing words like all of these thoughts are coming up. Thoughts aren't coming up. You're making those thoughts. Try shifting the language when you're describing it to yourself. See what a difference that makes. Instead of, I was trying to meditate and all of these thoughts keep coming in. Yeah? Think about it as I was meditating. And as I meditated, I kept thinking. I kept making these thoughts. And when you put it in that way and you put it in the first person, rather than you being the victim of the thoughts, right? Then you're the one who's doing them. You're accepting responsibility for them. And that's a much more honest way of talking about it. You see how that kind of social dishonesty slips into it? Are these thoughts, I was trying to meditate, right? Because I'm a good person and good people try to do the right thing, right? So there I was trying to meditate, but then all these thoughts kept annoying me. So I'm such a victim. If only those naughty thoughts wouldn't do those things. But that's nothing to do with me because I'm doing my bit, which is to try. So there's this kind of subtle dishonesty in that way of approaching meditation. So instead of thinking about it like that, then think about it in terms that I'm meditating. As I meditate, then I keep thinking. Not somebody else, not thoughts arising, not thoughts coming in, but I was doing that. I was making those thoughts. So then you realize, okay, that's something that I'm doing. Because it's something that you're doing, it's something that you can stop doing. Right? You're not the victim of your own thoughts. You're the creator of your own thoughts. And if you can make them, you can stop making them. So the further we go in meditation, the deeper that we take our meditation practice, the more that we realize that it's not about developing a meditation object. It's not about making your mind peaceful. It's not about learning to concentrate. It's not about any of these things. If anything, it's about learning to accept responsibility. Learning to know where it is that you're at. Learning to accept everything that you are, whether good or bad. Because the bad part of you, the part of you that you judge or that you don't like or reject, that part of you is also there in the meditation as well. So if you keep on trying to push it out and pretend that it doesn't exist or pretend that it's somehow outside you, you're just going to create a lot of suffering. So to start with, you just accept. And yeah, it is suffering. Yeah, it's true. You think all kinds of unwholesome thoughts, it's really kind of nasty, or evil thoughts, or, you know, revenge or whatever. That's part of who you are. But we don't progress in meditation by rejecting those things, by pushing them out. We progress them by accepting them, by realizing them. And the amazing thing is that once we've accepted them, they're not so, it's not such a big deal. Actually, thoughts are just thoughts. It's all right. You've had a million thoughts in your mind since the day you were born. You're all right. You're here. I haven't killed you or anyone else. Most of you, anyway. Thoughts are okay. Emotions are okay. What was the last time, you know, you sat in meditation and you tried to sort of, you didn't like what you were feeling. You're feeling sad or depressed or anxious or jealous or whatever. And then you try, oh, I'm going to be meditative and I'm going to make myself peaceful so I don't have to feel that feeling anymore. Right? So that's what we do meditation for, so we can get rid of feelings that we don't like. And you can hear that when people describe meditation. This is a classic one when people do Vipassana meditation, and they do like these noting techniques, and they do noting and they go, wow, it was amazing, I just noted it and it went away, right? As if the purpose of being aware of something is to make it go away, and that's a relief, and you don't notice how you're getting attached to using meditation as a method of trying to control, of trying to get rid of. And every time that happens, actually that should be a disaster. Right? If you're meditating and you're aware of a painful feeling and it goes away, you should say, oh dear, the painful feeling's gone away. That was my friend. That was part of me. I had something to learn from that painful feeling and now it's gone. That's all right. Another one will come soon enough. So we just allow everything to be. Allow everything in. Don't judge, don't reject, don't try to control. And the more that you just let that all happen, you realize actually it's all okay. It's all just part of who you are. It's all just how the mind works, it's all. Nothing special. And so within that, the breath is a rhythm and an energy and a force that soothes and calms and quietens. So we don't think of the breath as being something out there. It's not like an object that you pay attention to that's separate from who you are. Right? But the breath, think of the breath as being that rhythm or that movement within you whose function is to calm you down, to settle all of those disturbances and sufferings and so on. Not to make them go away, but to make them be loved, be appeased. So that what was anxious before is no longer anxious. It's not pushed away, it's not outside, it's just okay, it's held, it's contained, it's all right. So if we practice like this, letting things be, and letting the mind become more and more peaceful. Then when your mind becomes more peaceful, it's a very real peace. It's not a tense peace. It's a peace that isn't afraid. You're not afraid of your own thoughts. You're not afraid of your own emotions. Okay, so we should do some meditation together. Let's do some breath meditation until 4 o'clock. Do some guided meditation. sitting quietly. Letting the mind settle back into the body. Whatever sensations that you're feeling, just let them in. The mind is thinking about this or that. Just be aware of that thought. Don't get involved in it. Just appreciate, oh, okay. That's what I'm doing. I'm thinking that. If there's any suffering, then have compassion for that. Really feel it. But don't get involved in it. Just be aware of it. And as the mind becomes more peaceful, you become aware of the gentle rhythm of the breath as it comes in and the breath as it goes out. Breath coming in, breath going out. Breath coming in, breath going out. Not seeing the breath as something out there that we have to make ourselves concentrate on. Instead, see the breath as something that comes to us. Like the waves on the shore. Or like the wind in the trees. The breath is in us and through us and with us all the time. Let it calm you down. Don't you do the work. Let the breath do the work. You just be peaceful. all of the anxieties. Just let them stay. Invite them in. Be at peace with them. Let them be soothed and eased by the gentle rhythm of the breath. Breath coming in and breath going out. Breath coming in and breath going out. Now coming near the end of the meditation. Let the mind come back into the body, into the senses. Before we finish the meditation, taking a minute to reflect back, inquiring into cause and effect. What just happened? How did my mind change? What was it like to be present? What was it like to let the breath soothe you and calm you down? How does my mind feel like now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings finally realize Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And you can open your eyes and come out of meditation. Okay, very good. So, apparently there's no questions in the question basket. So are there any questions in your non-question baskets? Otherwise known as the head.
Curious when you said come back into the I can't remember now, but your body and your
senses. Yeah.
So I'm always trying to stay with those, and I'm just wondering. I'm trying to do that while I'm present, while I'm sitting there.
Okay. Yeah. Don't worry about it too much. Just all that I'm meaning at that stage in meditation, just let your mind come back to normal. Don't worry about it. It's just that period or that process is just about it's just about allowing a period in between when your mind becomes quite settled in the meditation, and then when you come out and you start being so-called normal again. So sometimes we can sort of wrench the mind out of meditation if you go too quickly. So it's just about letting yourself have that period to sort of just wake up, come back, here I am. Yeah, that's
all.
question, really. I just want to comment. It was very helpful. Taking responsibility for my thoughts.
Uh-huh.
I've never done that before, and it was very, very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Yeah. It's very strange, isn't it? It's very funny how our mind works, and we just divide everything up. That's how we cope. Right? This is like a coping strategy. And I think that sometimes we use meditation as a coping strategy. And actually, coping is all right, okay? So there's nothing wrong with coping, okay? Yeah, it's much better than the alternative, which is not coping, yeah? So that's how your mind learns to cope. You compartmentalize, yeah? You shut things off. And that's okay, you get by, right? But in a meditation, we should hopefully be aiming for something that's deeper than that. Yeah, and so allowing in rather than shutting off, and then accepting rather than excluding. Yeah. Yeah.
Bhante, that idea that you expressed in meditation was just talking about then, you know, essentially it's a splitting. It's a splitting of, you know, and, you know, I notice this a lot with people. In my work professionally. And splitting is a major way that people cope with the stuff they don't like within themselves, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I oftentimes conceptualize it as the internal Nazi sitting on your shoulder and then, you know, the guy that gets picked on the other side. There's lots of different ways of conceptualizing it. But my question to you is about synthesis, about synthesizing splits, because splits happen all the time in response to stress out in the world and in response to making efforts in meditation. Have you got any wise words on synthesis of that splitting, and is there a physiological component that is involved in that?
Okay, so two aspects of that. Okay, so in terms of the... the usual word in psychology that they use rather than synthesis would be integration.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not this myth, it's just terminology, but I think the idea behind integration, as far as I understand it, is that essentially that the different parts will talk to each other, okay? Because the splitting itself forms a function, okay? So there's nothing wrong with differentiation as such. Okay, so we need our mind to be differentiated in order to do different kinds of things, right? So you need to be able to use your mind in one way if you've got to do the accounting, and then another way if you've got to do a painting, and another way if you're trying to relate to somebody and so on. So actually learning to use your mind in different ways is a good thing. That's part of growing up. That's part of a mature mind. But the problem is that we tend to... that sometimes those different ways that we use our mind don't talk to each other. They're separated out from each other. And of course, those different ways that we use our mind can be more or less healthy, right? So some of them can be more skillful and some less skillful, and we can get trapped into patterns that will sort of perpetuate sort of abusive or manipulative or harmful patterns.
You oftentimes, if you're good at a certain aspect of some aspect of functioning, you'll overuse it and you'll underuse other areas. But my question to you is about the actual the synthesis. I'm not talking here about an intellectual psychological idea. I'm talking here about how to do it in meditation. I'm talking here about strategies about...
Sure. So that comes back to the question you mentioned in the previous question was about, is there a physiological aspect to it? And of course there is, yeah, because our mind and bodies are never completely separated. So these things actually do express themselves through our body, and you can feel them. They'll result in a different posture or a different whatever, different way of holding your body. So when you're meditating, when those different things come up, then just this is why when you have that idea of the thoughts coming up, rather than thinking the thoughts coming up, you think of, I'm making those thoughts, and then you think, well, why am I making them? Where are they coming from? What is there in me that's pushing those thoughts? Yeah, where are they coming from? And so underneath each of those thoughts that's happening in your meditation, there's some motivation, right? And that motivation usually is some form of suffering in one way or another. Yeah? So to try to understand those things, and when you bring your mind to understand them, which is usually just a matter of listening to them, listening to it compassionately and empathetically, all those different parts, oh, okay. And then the integration happens naturally. Now, you don't necessarily have to do anything specifically, but that's the most powerful thing that you can do, is just to listen. Listen to those different voices.
Is there always a physiological component in that? That when you drop down below the thinking and the ideas level, down to the almost like the feeling level, is there always a physiological component in that integration?
Sure. Definitely, yeah.
Can you say some more about that, please?
Well, you'll feel, for example, if you're doing breath meditation, you'll feel that in terms of the breath becoming more peaceful. Yeah? And when we first sit down to meditate, we feel all these different voices coming up, and we feel like, oh, I'm saying this, and I'm saying this, and I'm worried about this, and I'm worried about that. As we meditate more, and those voices become more peaceful and quiet, we feel also the breath becoming more peaceful. So that's one of the most obvious aspects. But you also feel that in terms of, you might feel it in more specific things. For example, if you might have a particular memory or a particular emotional behavior that you get into a habit of, that you hold in a part of your body. So you know, you might tense up your shoulder or your back or something like that. And so when that particular thing becomes activated during your meditation, then it might be that part of your body starts playing up or starts feeling tense or something like that. And then as you just continue, then again, without trying to make it go away, without trying to force it, but just accepting, oh, okay, that's where that is, and gradually that will become calm as well.
The Vipassana people talk about the end of the in-breath and the end of the out-breath, uh-huh, and a place where a lot of emotion is stored. And I know, you know, from bodywork, that people freeze, difficult to deal with emotions at the end of the in-breath and the end of the out-breath.
Okay, yeah.
And so, I mean, is that where you really need to be looking for chilling and softening and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think the whole breath, I'm not sure about specific. I mean, I do.
When people are frightened, they freeze, they hold their breath.
That's true, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so again, these are just the patterns. You can see it everywhere. It's quite amazing when you start looking into your body and your mind, everything is reflected in everything else. Yeah. So if your vehicle is the breath, yeah, if that's your chosen avenue of awareness, then you will see all those things happening within the breath. Yeah. If you choose another method, another approach to meditation, then you'll find that that will manifest maybe in somewhat different ways, but the same kinds of things will always manifest. Yeah, but usually with these things, you know, usually just bringing a compassionate awareness to them is enough, unless there's some more severe kind of problem, right? And so sometimes we're holding things at a much deeper level or much harder, and we need to actually investigate those things explicitly, right? Really, why is that that I keep on coming back to that, and even though I keep meditating, I can't seem to let go of it. But I'd just be cautious about doing that, especially initially. Most things will just be there for a while and then they'll go away. If we find something that just keeps on being there, then after a long time of practicing, then it's time to start looking. Maybe there's something else that needs to be investigated. Yeah. So just before we go, I just wanted to note, is anybody here doing the Oprah Winfrey Meditation Challenge? No? Oh, don't be embarrassed. Now, Oprah Winfrey's doing did a 21-day meditation challenge together with Deepak Chopra. Yeah, so you're supposed to meditate every day for 21 days. And then you get like an email and you get guided meditations and so on and so forth. No one's doing it?
No. Is it too late to start?
You can try, yeah. I'm not sure when the deadline is, yeah. It's an online thing. Yeah, they're running an online meditation course. It's quite, I was astonished, you know. I mean, it's quite remarkable to find, you know, it's the world's, basically the world's biggest media celebrity. It's not just talking about meditation, right? Not just even recommending it, but actually running a meditation course, yeah, that anybody can join for free. Oh, it was quite astonishing, really. Yeah. No, they have started. Yeah, so I think it, I'm sure it might have finished now. Yeah. But anyway, I just wonder, I wanted to know if anybody had been doing it, if anyone knew, you know, could say what it had been like or whatever. Anyway, you all missed your chance.
Did you do it, Bunter?
I did not do it, no. But the funny thing was in the description of it, it said that like each day you have a guided meditation by Deepak Chopra, which will be approximately 16.5 minutes long. And the approximately really killed me. I thought, what are you? This is for meditators that are on a real schedule, right? You know. anyway, okay. Let's finish up by paying respects to the Triple Gem.